Welcome to Streaming Thoughts, where we stream our thoughts on movies, TV, and all things nerdy. I am Daniel.
And I am Nathan.
And welcome to our podcast. So Nathan, what is on the news docket today?
Oh, MCU is what I'm talking about today.
Lots of things in the MCU, right?
James Gunn, obviously doing the next Guardians of the Galaxy, which we last saw in connection with Thor as they're heading off into space. So he has confirmed, whilst he is not working on Thor Love and Thunder, they are collaborating with Taika Waititi to make sure that all the characters are where they're supposed to be, since they'll both be represented a little bit.
That's awesome. And I believe he might have done something similar, if I recall correctly, with Avengers Infinity War, where he did consult or provided guidance with the to the Russo brothers on the Guardians of the Galaxy characters.
Yeah. Another one, given the popularity of WandaVision, they are adding more MCU properties to Disney Plus, including a Wakanda series.
Ooh, that's exciting. What kind of series? Do we know? Do we have any details on that?
They announced a Black Panther Kingdom of Wakanda coming to Disney Plus. So a Disney Plus series focusing on the life and actions of the people in Wakanda.
Nice. That's awesome. So we're probably not going to see much of the A-list actors, I imagine. Maybe a cameo here and there, but probably not. It's not going to focus or center around any of the characters that we've seen in the Black Panther films, or so far at least.
Yeah. And the third one, Tom Holland has leaked about Spider-Man 3.
Of course he has. What has he leaked now?
Well, you know, previously we were talking about the rumors of Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield being approached to reprise their Spider-Man roles.
Yeah, because we had this whole theory about the multiverse and all that stuff with Spider-Man 3.
Tom Holland has confirmed that they are not in Spider-Man 3.
They are not in Spider-Man 3. Now, here's the thing, though. I wonder if Marvel has reached a point where they're just feeding things to Tom that are completely false just because they're like, oh, he leaked it. That's fine. That wasn't true anyway.
Well, a lot of people are now kind of shifting that rumor because the rumor about Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield being involved is still out there. So a lot of people, especially with Quicksilver showing up in WandaVision, the X-Men Quicksilver showing up in WandaVision, a lot of people are shifting their speculations that maybe they are going to be reprising their roles as Spider-Man, but in Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness.
Haven't they cast other actors that are supposed to also appear or show up in Spider-Man 3 that are from other properties? Like, isn't Emma Stone supposed to show up too, and Kristen Dunst and stuff like that?
Jamie Foxx, Emma Stone, yeah, Kristen Dunst. They're all rumored, like,
but not Jamie Foxx though. He did actually confirm.
Yeah, Jamie Foxx says he's coming back. He didn't necessarily confirm he's coming back for Spider-Man 3 though.
Oh, he didn't. That's right. He didn't say that. He just said that he was coming back, right? Got it.
I mean, he did show a stylized poster of a live action Electro into the Spider-Verse. But again, that was a fan-made poster.
True,
so
true.
Hinting about the multiverse again. Mm-hmm. But we only know one movie specifically handling the multiverse.
That deals the multiverse, and that's Doctor Strange Multiverse of Madness. You're right. That's interesting. I mean, I guess it would work if these characters end up showing up there, although I feel like they fit better in a Spider-Man film, especially considering that Doctor Strange is going to be a character in Spider-Man 3 as well.
I don't know, man. At this point, I'm thinking it's all anything is going to go.
Anything can happen. The only people that know are Kevin Feige and whoever's working on those movies. And even then, like,
they might not know all the details.
They might not know all the details because Marvel is being so sneaky now. That's why, I mean, they gave fake scripts for Avengers Endgame to people, right? I mean, they hid so much stuff. I mean, they called the funeral scene the wedding scene, you know? And even Tom Holland, when he showed up to film that scene, he was like, wait, where's Robert? It's supposed to be a wedding. He only found out what it was when he showed up to film that.
Yeah, most people did. So, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying.
They're getting better. Certain things are definitely being kept under wraps to be big surprises. So,
yeah.
And previously we had talked about a rumor that Chris Evans was approached to reprise his role as Captain America, which he shot down saying, no, that's news to me.
News to me. Yeah.
With all these other things, what if he was approached to reprise his role as the Human Torch in Multiverse of Madness?
That would be weird and cool at the same time, but only if we get to see Michael B. Jordan as the Human Torch too.
Oh,
that would be cool.
Absolutely.
right?
That'd be awesome.
The only good thing that came out of that movie was Michael B. Jordan as the Human Torch.
Yeah, he was probably the best actor in that one. And
that was literally the best part about that movie.
You know what I really want right now, though?
What?
I want to get an Oculus Rift and set it up with all the hacks to play Minecraft on it.
That sounds amazing. And you know, for me being a super nerd with a fancy setup here, I have yet to enter the world of VR. I haven't bought anything related to it. And I could if I wanted to, but I haven't yet because I'm waiting for things to get better with that
more
technology.
Mainstream, I think, is the real word. Because a lot of it is very thing. Like, very I was niche. Hoping with when the Nintendo did the Wii and had the immersive hand motion controls.
Yeah.
That the next generation was going to be a Wii VR rather than the Wii U. Yep. That's what it needs. We need some sort of like mainstream multi-game platform that everybody knows and everybody uses for VR to get to where we really want to see it.
Yes, absolutely. Honestly, once it catches up to that level, we're going to start to see some pretty interesting stuff happening around the world.
Yeah, such as the Playbox version of this concept that takes place in Ready Player One.
Yes, the Oasis. And that is a topic of today's conversation because in a previous episode, we found out, or I found out, that you hadn't seen this movie, which is crazy to me that you haven't seen this movie. It's Ready Player One. It's been out for a couple years now, and I know you've read the book.
Actually, no. See, that's actually the biggest reason is I haven't read the book, and my wife didn't want me to see the movie before I read the book. I've started the book, but I just never had the time to sit down and finish it. So
finish it?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So that was part of it. My wife was super insistent that I read the book before seeing the movie. We kind of broke her rule on that for this podcast.
Got it. Okay. Rules were broken. Now, here's the thing. I will say that I have a very fond memory of going to the movie theaters for this movie. So I have really good memory association with this film because, and I'm going to tell the story. So it was February. It was around my birthday. And I decided that I was going to treat myself and go to a movie. I bought the tickets online, showed up. And when I showed up to the movie theater, the Dolby Cinema was not playing Ready Player One. They switched the movies to a different one.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and it sucked. And I was like, what the hell? So I showed up to the customer service kiosk or desk or whatever. And I told them like, hey, guys, I ordered these tickets online. Here's my confirmation. But the movie's not what I ordered. And they apologized for the mishap. They refunded the money for the tickets I bought, gave me an extra ticket for any movie I wanted. And they offered to give me a ticket for Ready Player One for a showing like a couple hours later on IMAX 3D.
Nice.
And I was like, sweet, that sounds good. The movie theater's located in a mall. I can kill a couple hours in a mall, no problem. And I went back to the theater when it was time. I went to get my popcorn and soda. And because it was my birthday and I totally forgot about that, I got a free large popcorn and large soda. So basically, I got free food and a free movie ticket and an extra movie ticket. And so I had a real good time watching Ready Player One. So I always will associate that good time with this movie.
And overall, I mean, it is a good time movie. Especially if you have a lot of nostalgia for, you know, late 90s, early 2000s pop culture.
Absolutely. And even more current stuff, too. They really did include a bunch of more current things, or at least things that were happening around the time, like, you know, at the time, like Overwatch, for example, was a very popular video game. I mean, it still is, but like at the time, it was like at its peak. And so they added some Overwatch characters to it too, you know, and some StarCraft stuff in there as well. So it's just, if you're a nerd, Ready Player One is a movie that will tickle your nerdiness for sure. And overall, it's just a fun ride. That's what I wanted out of Ready Player One. I didn't want any deep exploration into what it means to be a nerd or any of that kind of stuff. I just wanted it to be a fun movie, and it delivers in that in every way.
Now, I do have to say the motion controls of this virtual reality don't make a whole lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Like, people are going to get themselves hurt and or killed playing in the Oasis. I mean, you have their opening on Mount Doom, and it showed this one person climbing up over a cliff. And then in the real world, she's climbing up over the back of her couch. And then sitting on top of her couch to be at the, quote, top of the cliff. And then when she gets shot, she falls backwards off the couch.
Yeah.
That's not a good design. Sure.
It really isn't.
I was going to say, or the worst one is at the end when they're having the big epic battle where everybody in the Oasis was showing up for it. They're driving through the city and they're seeing people in the VR running down the streets and doing this, like, you know, crazy kicks and motions controls and all this stuff. And it's just like, yeah, you're going to hit your neighbor.
Yeah. Or you're going to run into traffic.
In front of a car.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I love those little bit. That's the Hollywood magic, right? That's where we suspend our disbelief. At the beginning of the movie, you know, when we had Wade, you know, suit up so he can dive into the Oasis, that whole sequence was more believable, right? Because he strapped himself onto a treadmill, which, by the way, those treadmills are a thing that exists in real life right now. They're in a prototype stage.
New treadmills, yep.
When we saw that was definitely a more, this makes sense to me kind of thing, right? Where it was, you know, there were safety protocols or safety measures in place where you can run in one place and you're not going to bump into anything or hurt yourself in any way. Because let's be honest, there are several videos on YouTube of people hurting themselves while they're in VR.
Speaking about videos on YouTube, the inciting incident of this movie is not believable to me at all.
What do you mean?
Okay, so supposedly after unlocking the first clue, a portal opened up to say, mm-hmm. Here is this racing game. Everyone's like, okay, if you beat this racing game, you're going to get the first key. Mm-hmm. So for 5 years, it's been impossible to beat this racing game because King Kong always kills you at the end.
Right. Always stops you at the end.
There's a YouTube channel that my kids like to watch that I've kind of gotten sucked into it called Let's mm-hmm. Game It Out. In this YouTube video, one of the ones, he's doing a cooking simulator and he figures out, you're not supposed to be able to leave the kitchen, but he figured out if he opens up a drawer at the same time as pulling out a phone, mm-hmm. the game glitches, puts him in the drawer, so that when he closes the drawer, it glitches him out of the kitchen and into the restaurant eating area.
Nice.
Are you telling me that guy would not figure out just drive backwards in under 5 years?
Yeah. I was going to say 5 years is a long time for people not to figure out something like that for sure. It doesn't really make sense. You're right, because it's not like Wade was the only person in the world who was obsessed with James Halliday, right?
Right.
There were other people who were. In the movie, it sort of showed like Wade was the best. Like he was more obsessed than anyone else. And he was able to figure it out of what the clue was, which is to go backwards. It seemed like during the conversation with the curator that everyone knew that James Halliday hated rules, mm-hmm. right? So how do you not go from that to what if we drive backwards?
Yeah,
right?
I mean, the fundamental rule of a racing game is you drive forward to the finish line.
And if James Halliday hated rules,
first thing you try is breaking that rule.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why you're right. I mean, the whole bit about 5 years is a really tricky thing, especially nowadays in video games, right? There really isn't a whole lot of mysteries left in video games. Like, people will figure stuff out really quickly because lots of people just
used to leave debugging codes in, like the famous Contra code, because it was used for testing and allowing people to quickly jump to different points of the game or test mm-hmm. out different things to look for glitches and places it breaks. And they put that in there for that purpose, and they mm-hmm. left it in there because, like, well, why bother taking it out? No one's mm-hmm. going to figure this out randomly.
Right.
Similarly, Mortal Kombat, the fatalities mm-hmm. in that were originally something they put in there, and they're like, people are never going to actually use a fatality.
The game came out, and like a few weeks later, people were already doing fatalities.
Yeah, people were mastering the fatalities for every single character.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the crazy thing about it.
Yeah, I mean, I remember when I was a kid, and I remember when the neighborhood kids, you know, we all got together and played Mortal Kombat. There were definitely things that people figured out, you know, mm-hmm. and it was experimental play. That's what we used to do. That's what games are all about. It's about experimenting. And so I think that the 5 year gap is a little too long for it to be convincing that people hadn't been able to figure this out.
Overall, I really don't think it would have fundamentally changed the game or the movie in any way. if they had said this was the day after his living will was read after his funeral.
Or like, it's been 3 months and people haven't been able to figure it out. It wouldn't have changed. It really wouldn't
have. It's been 3 months and someone figured out the first clue that just opened up this portal, right?
Right.
None of that would have fundamentally changed anything overall.
No, yeah, absolutely. Because the loss of James Halliday, that would have felt the same, I think, regardless of it. Because that's what they wanted to convey, right? They wanted to convey that James Halliday died and that sucked. He's this Easter egg that needs to be found. I think that you're right. Ultimately, the length of time of how long it had been since James Halliday died to when the first clue was found wouldn't have mattered. Now, having said that, that whole race sequence was really cool.
Oh God, don't even get me started on the special effects of this movie. This is a cinematography ride.
It really is.
The interesting thing that they did with this is how much they really balanced tipping over into the uncanny valley with very lifelike people, very lifelike, you know, facial expressions,
avatars,
all of that, yeah. Avatars, but still keeping it just on that other side of these are just still video game characters.
Video game characters, yes.
So that you don't have that uncanny valley issue.
I completely agree with you on that. They really walked that line very well in this movie, especially, I want to say, in the Shining scene.
Yeah.
Or the sequence with the Shining. I thought they walked that line extremely well there because it was, you kind of got that feeling of this was a real movie that actually was filmed, and the set designs and the setting of this film was, I mean, looked completely real. But then it was, you had all of these avatars just walking around, and they didn't feel completely out of place, right? And that, I think, was such a brilliant move from the visual effects people. Just did an amazing job at making you feel like this is still a video game, like it's still a fake world. It does not matter how real it looks. Also, for example, another one is when Sorrento was tricked that he was coming out of the oasis into the real world.
That they pulled him out of the oasis into the real world. Yep.
Now, did you notice a very particular detail about Daito during that whole scene?
Which one?
It had to do with his eyes. If you go back and you look at Daito's eyes during that scene, you will notice a very particular shiny thing about his eyes that I've only seen it in one other movie, and that's Blade Runner. He has that same weird shiny thing on his eyes that he was basically a replicant. But it was still an interesting bit to, again, to kind of give it away that this isn't real. And it's those little subtle bits here and there that are kind of spread out in the world is what makes this whole experience so cool.
Now, one of the things that about the difference between the avatar and the player, when they were in The Shining and they were asking if everyone had seen The Shining, the not Daito, but his brother. His brother Cho said, I can only watch it with my hands.
Yeah, through my hands, yeah.
Through my hands. So I was expecting the reveal that that was actually a blind character that was somehow navigating, playing the world through some sort of tactile, braille-like interface because of that comment.
Yeah, no, to me it was more that he was too scared that he couldn't actually watch it. He had to, like, put his hands over his face, and that's the only way he could watch it.
Yeah, I get that now. And that kind of ties into him being younger and everything else.
The interesting bit, I think, about this world is that we just abandon reality, right? We just abandoned the real world and decided to live our lives in this virtual world. But it's fascinating, I think, that Halliday's mission was to find someone that cared about the real world as much as possible. He wanted that person to be the one to take control of the oasis, ultimately, right?
Yeah.
So I thought that was a really cool contrast with it, what it ended up being at the end versus what Halliday intended for it to be.
Mm-hmm. On that point about, because that was very much what Artemis's goal was all about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see what I want you to see. You know about me what I want you to know about me, sort of.
Yes,
that whole speech.
Exactly.
Honestly, I was actually a little bit disappointed with how that played out because my thought was, yeah, she has a birthmark across her eyes. She likes to cover up with her hair. What a hideous deformity. She's still a very attractive person just like her avatar yeah, was.
I know.
I would have been a lot more sold on this. I fell in love with you in the virtual. I love you for your for who you are, not what you look like.
Yeah.
If they had actually, you know, not hired two incredibly good-looking actors to play these lead roles. I guess in the book, the main character is described as having a few more pounds and not quite so fit and good-looking.
Hollywood-looking.
Yeah, see, that would have been a good one. For instance, could you imagine getting someone like Jonah Hill to have played the lead in this, right?
I think Jonah Hill could pull that off, yeah.
His real-life person, he could really play his insecure... People, I don't know if people really like me. I don't have a good high self-esteem of myself. And then in the virtual world, he could have played, I am super suave. I'm super on top of it. Everyone, out of my way, that sort of thing.
You know which movie actually I think that did a really good job at that? Jumanji, the remake.
Yeah.
Jumanji did a really good job with the casting of the kids versus the avatars that they play in the game. The Rock, for example, the kid that plays The Rock, that's such a nerdy guy, skinny, nerdy, nerdy kid and with lots of insecurities, and definitely see that big contrast between the Rock versus this kid. And it's so funny to watch The Rock play a very insecure, nerdy kid. I think that the actors did a good job with it for sure, ultimately, but I would have been okay with a different cast for sure. I think Jonah Hill would have been a terrific Wade Watts for sure.
And there's lots of different actors I could have done. And that was just the first one that came to the top of my head just because of a previous episode that we had talked about his performance at playing different characters.
Different characters and different levels
of confidence.
Absolutely. No, you're right. Now, this movie is riddled with Easter eggs. This whole entire movie is basically a movie about Easter eggs. Now, I've seen this movie, I'd probably say about 4 or 5 times now since it's come out. I still have not caught like all of the stuff that it's supposed to be out there.
Although, I tell you what, I would have picked a different mecha form than a Gundam to go take on Mechagodzilla.
Mechagodzilla? Okay, so let's talk about that then. What would you have picked?
Evangelion.
Got it.
It's about twice, maybe 2.5 times taller than Mechagodzilla.
Yep.
Much more agile than Mechagodzilla. Comes with a wide range of heavy-duty firearms and vibro knives and things like that.
Yep.
Plus, on top of it, he can only use the gauntlet for about 2 minutes. The Evangelions, when they're not plugged into a power source, can only remain operational for, I think, a minute, 2 minutes, something like that.
Yep. Yeah, no, it would have been perfect. Absolutely. I would have picked, because by the time this movie had come out, this other movie had already been released, so technically would have still been part of it, or could have been part of it. I would have picked either Gypsy Danger or, I can't remember, but it was Striker something out of the Pacific Rim movies.
Yeah, I can see Gypsy Danger going for it.
Yeah, I would have picked that. That would have been a really cool, although technically you would have needed 2 people to operate that. But this is a video game. It doesn't matter.
It's a video game. You can stretch the rules. You can have your second pilot be a construct within the universe.
Oh my God, that would be so cool if you get to pick who your second pilot is going to be.
Yeah.
Now, when Avengers Endgame came out and we saw that epic sequence when all the Avengers and everyone else that's basically ever fought in an MCU battle appeared through the portal scenes, which is the all-time favorite scene for a lot of people. You know, when I saw that, I was like, that reminded me a lot about Ready Player One and that final sequence when they were all charging.
I think that's kind of a trope in Hollywood right now, and it's one that I'm not eager for the Avengers to jump into anytime soon. Like, yeah, you did it in Endgame, just you don't need to do it again in whatever the next Avengers movie is, because it has this over-the-top thing of this massive chaotic fight, but because of how big and epic it's supposed to be, you can really only pay attention to any one person for a few seconds.
Yes.
It doesn't really give much of a feel for will they, won't they, how's the tide of war going, things like that.
So with that being said, which one do you think did it better? Avengers Endgame or Ready Player One when it came to handling this big epic battle sequence?
You know, I actually want to say Endgame because mm-hmm. there was certainly a number of points where they did choose to focus on it. It seemed mm-hmm. like the tide of the battle was turning. For example, when Scarlet Witch almost single-handedly takes out Thanos.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He is forced to call in a Rainfire. In order to turn it back and get free himself.
Mm-hmm.
That's an example. This one never really had too much of that, other than the progression that all these other people were just serving mm-hmm. as filler or background characters to yeah. distract the general fight, to allow the Iron Giant and Wade to get to the arcade.
To the arcade, yeah, exactly. And I think you're right. I think that the fact that Endgame decided to focus, that have specific moments where they focused on specific characters was a really good way to kind of showcase that in the end, this is an Avengers movie, right? And the way that the camera and everything kind of transitioned from one character to another was also really, really well handled in Avengers Endgame. With Ready Player One, it was definitely a little bit more chaotic
mm-hmm.
than Avengers Endgame for sure.
Which, again, this level 99 artifact, if Artemis had not stayed in the war room and mm-hmm. be on the, quote, other side of the line, that entire plan never would have mattered.
It wouldn't have mattered.
Not really a good plan on Wade's part.
Yeah, I mean, if it's an impenetrable shield, it was a little weird that he decided to just get everybody to attack this one thing, since again, it's impenetrable and their only way to disable it is from within, through a spell. Now, going back a little bit to the logistical components of how the Oasis works, the one thing that I'm still figuring out, like, how does this work, is Sorrento's chair. How does he walk? Does he press a keypad? Does he just think it? Because everybody else is standing, but he's just sitting there.
I mean, the chair was kind of a little bit more of a believable thing where he kind of locks himself into it so that he can, you know, engage without actually having to move and turn, and probably had a lot more of a tactile control system. But the thing that got me for how this worked, and it didn't really occur to me until Artemis was arrested for her debt collection and was put into a loyalty center.
Yeah.
It occurred to me at that point that you know what the Oasis is, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a shared VR world where people are Bitcoin mining.
Yeah, basically.
That's how she's working off her, quote, debt, is performing tasks to mine Bitcoins for IOI.
Or credits, or whatever you want to call it, but it's the same concept.
It's cryptocurrency, it's Bitcoins.
Yeah, for sure.
And you can tell that this is a real thing, that this is what they're doing. When Wade wins the first key, and he mm-hmm. gets a reward of 100,000 credits, or coins, or whatever, he uses that to buy his suit, a real world, not just an in-game thing. He uses the coins he got in-game to buy a real world suit to be sent to
buy real world stuff. You're right. Yes, absolutely. And that's such an interesting concept, right? Because, again, essentially, it's another way that we have abandoned, or that this world at least, abandoned reality, right? Is that currency is all earned in the Oasis, which also makes me wonder. I mean, there are several things we need to happen in the real world. We had a scene, for example, early on in the movie when Wade was talking about the Oasis and kind of describing what it was. There was a particular sequence, a particular scene when Wade talked about how if you got killed in the Oasis, you lost everything. You had to start again from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
And then it cuts to several people getting killed. But one of them was an office worker who lost his mind when he freaking lost everything.
Yeah, he lost everything. And he almost, and his coworkers had to grab him to keep him from jumping out the window.
Yeah, but I'm thinking he was at the office and he got killed. I wonder what he was doing at the office working, though. Like, what was his job there? You know? And so that's why it's a little weird to see, like, I never really questioned it until now that you mentioned that everything, all the money you make is in the game. So then why do you have to go to work?
Well, I mean, it's no different than what the people working for IOI were doing. They were working a job that was somehow taking place in the Oasis as its operating system, right? So if you're working on, say, a corporate stockbroker type thing, your primary role is to help mine and collect these Bitcoins, and you're like the rising star, you've earned the company millions,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get your commission check for it, then all of a sudden mm-hmm. you zero out because of a mistake that you made?
Yeah.
That's the kind of thing that I think was what was going on there.
For sure. That's totally devastating because it would suck.
You also have to figure this was written at a time before COVID. And like my job, 100% able to do it from home. There is almost no difference between what I do at home versus what I do in the office. Why am I actually still going into the office was always a question that I had. And yeah. Everyone's like, oh, well, you'd be more productive in the office. Well, COVID came along. Everyone started working from home. And our productivity did not go down.
Did not go down. No, it did not.
I think this was kind of a still a little bit of a change where it was like, oh, if you were working some sort of virtual job for a company, whatever that may be, you would still be going into an office to be working it.
For sure. OASIS is technically an acronym. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah, it's an acronym. Ontologically Anthropocentric Sensory Immersive Simulation.
That just rolls right off the tongue.
Right. Now, we've seen the actor that plays Nolan Sorrento in other properties, including the MCU. That's Ben Mendelsohn. And Ben Mendelsohn typically plays a villain in his films, but not in the MCU. In the MCU, he actually played a good guy. Do you remember who Ben Mendelsohn played?
I do not.
He played Talos in Captain Marvel. And
again, Talos in Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yeah.
But then again, I suppose I can be a little bit forgiven not recognizing that because plenty of makeup and...
Oh, I mean, yeah, it's tough. Although technically he didn't wear makeup in a couple scenes in Captain Marvel. Now, what did you think of the sound design for this movie and the soundtracks and the different songs that we got to hear?
You know, it really played in well, especially at the very beginning. The songs that they chose... Like, right from the beginning, be like, hey, this is going to be a nostalgia road trip.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And since that's basically what the whole movie is an Easter egg of nostalgias, using the music to drive that point home and doing it very well, totally on point.
The movie, for sure, had a lot of very, you know, it was supposed to have been this epic film, right? As far as more of just like the epic world that it was supposed to represent, right? I mean, the Oasis, it looked to be... infinite, right? It was supposed to have been everything.
A casino the size of an entire planet.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, it was, you know, the limits were basically your own imagination. And so they had an original composer for this movie, and that changed during film. It's a familiar composer for you, I'm sure, who directed or who composed for, you know, small films, nothing big like Star Wars. You know who I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
John Williams was supposed to have been the composer for this film, but I don't know exactly what happened, but he left the project, and so the other composer that came in...
The actual composer, the Alan Silvestri, I don't actually recognize him, though.
Oh, but you have heard him so many times. He composed for Captain America, the First Avenger, The Avengers, Infinity War, Endgame. He's done it. He's done all of those big blockbuster films. You know, when I was listening to the score of this film, I was like, I'm getting some Alan Silvestri vibes here because he just has this like way of giving you the epicness of a world kind of thing. It's what he did with, again, with the Avengers, is what he did with Endgame and all that stuff. And it's funny that he's come back again for this film. And I think it worked out really well.
One way or the other, you're going to turn me into a composer geek, aren't you?
That's my goal, man. I love music in films. I love scores, and I think the scores are so crucial to films that half the time if I don't remember the score, then if it's not memorable or if it doesn't make me feel things when I'm watching it, then then it's like, oh, that was a lame score. But yeah, this Alan Silvestri does it again in Ready Player One.
All right. Now, what the heck is up with the society outside of the Oasis? Because I tell you what, all the way up until the very, very end of this movie, like the final scenes, I was convinced that there were no cops and IOI was basically the law. The law of the city.
Yeah.
Because, I'm sorry, you are using drones to plant explosives, blow up, and take down a stack?
Yeah.
That should be investigated.
Yeah, right?
There should be lots of evidence to be like, yeah, we saw a lot of drones coming through. There's chemical traces of explosives. I mean, even today, I mean, we can track explosives after it exploded to the manufacturer that made that explosive based on the chemical signatures. Yep. They would have dragged that back to Iowa. I'd be like, yeah, your explosives were used to take down a stack. A lot of people saw your drones flying in and around the structural support of this one.
Yep. What do you think about that? And Iowa, it's like, how about a lot of money and we never talk about this again?
And that was just the thing. It's like, it really kind of felt like the entire purpose of IOI seemed to have been built around this necessity of owning the Oasis. Almost like my first thought was that they, you know, technically owned it and they were just trying to get the Holloway shares so they didn't lose them or give them up. But no, that was a completely different company. I'm like, why is IOI the only company that is pursuing this gold mine of a business proposition?
Right. And it seemed like it was just this hyper capitalist mentality that sort of drove this company, right? This, we can cover 80% of the player's visual field with ads.
Before you know, they start like, having seizures. Before they start, not before they get annoyed and stop playing. Before they have seizures.
Yeah, and I think that was very telling about what that company was about, right? It was about making money all the time. And even you know, during that conversation, right, with Sorrento and that board where he was like, our investors are not going to be happy about this. And Sorrento's like, it's not our job to make them happy. It's our job to make them money.
Right.
That, again, just kind of like informed this organization and what they stood for, which is just to make as much money out of this as possible, which kind of, no, I'm not going to lie, kind of reminded me a little bit about Facebook, to be honest.
Yeah, although the general lack of ads outside of the shopping center where he bought his Rubik's Cube and all Holy Hand Grenade and all of that stuff, there would be more ads in this space just in general. It might not be filling up the individual players, you know, visual screen, but you're on Doomworld, there'd be a self-replenishing ad showing, say, a high-end digital firearm you could pick up, the BFG. Get the Doom BFG. And people can shoot it and do everything else, and it regenerates and be part of the interactive society. You would see that in the world already.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit of an unbelievable issue.
I guess. I mean, they kind of talked in the movie that Halliday really had very strict regulations when it came to ads in the Oasis. Like, there were only certain sections where ads were supposed to have been showcased. And I think like the store or a marketplace was when we kind of got to see a lot more, like that scene when Wade was shopping around for all of this stuff, right? Like the cube and the holy hand grenade or whatever it was that he grabbed. I think that we see more, we saw more ads around that marketplace, but everywhere else, it was definitely not even a thing. Now, from a video game perspective, that's not great, because if I'm new to the Oasis, I would like some direction as to where to go, right? And so I think that having that information is probably there, although maybe they have like a Oasis 101 crash course where there's like all of these visual aids that are there to help you out. The tutorial world. Right, the tutorial world, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Which would be really cool. I kind of want to see what that world looks like. All right, Nathan. So with that, should we jump into our TLDL?
Too long, didn't listen.
All right. And this is a section where we give you our closing thoughts on our movies or TV show that we're discussing. So Nathan, Ready Player One, TLDL.
Ready Player One rests comfortably in that realm of nostalgia without being over-reliant on it. It brings a unique story. It brings an interesting perspective. There's maybe a few things that don't necessarily make the best sense or could be more highly developed, but in the end, it was a good, fun action ride from beginning to end, and not really all that far off from where we could maybe see ourselves in the future as video games become more immersive.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that with, I mean, I totally agree with you. I always enjoy watching Ready Player One because it's just a fun ride. You know, it's what it's meant to be. It's not meant to be anything else. It's just meant to be a fun movie. And I absolutely enjoy it. And you're right. I think that it is a little bit of a window into a future where we are going to spend more time in virtual reality. I mean, it is no joke. I mean, for those of you who have not experienced virtual reality, let me tell you, as someone who has experienced it, your brain is very easily tricked. And I was very easily tricked with like the Oculus 2, an early prototype of the Oculus, let alone something that is going to be far more advanced than that in like 10 years time or something like that, right? It's going to be a very different experience for sure of how we consume media, not just video games, but media in general, right? Once we have a more mainstream method of making sure that everyone has a virtual reality headset that's accessible and that's easy to use and doesn't require you to have like $1,000 computer or anything crazy like that. Mm-hmm. Once that happens, it's going to be very different. Like, I believe that how we consume media in general is going to change.
Absolutely. And with that, Dan, final question for you today. Did you notice what he did wrong when deploying the holy hand grenade?
No, I did not. What did he do?
He must count to 3, the number preceding after 2, but not to 4. He did not do the count. The holy hand grenade does not activate unless you hold it aloft and do the count. It's a requirement. It's right there in the instructions.
All right, hey, if you agree with Nathan or disagree with Nathan on the instructions on how to deploy the hand grenade, you can definitely let us know by hitting us up on Facebook at
Streaming Thoughts and on Twitter at
Streaming Geek.
This has been Nathan.
And this has been Daniel.
Thank you for listening.